Hello and welcome to the Rider Report podcast. I'm your host, Mark Smith, and with me, as always, is our CFL insider, Matt Sheridan. And it's playoffs in the CFL. We're into the division finals now, and it's a couple of big games coming up this weekend. Let's go back to last weekend, though, and let's talk about those two division games that are the division semifinals that happened on the weekend. And first, we have the Edmonton Eskimos upsetting the Montreal Alouettes. If we have Trevor Harris clicking the way he was clicking in that game, is that going to be something that, you know, the Tiger Cats need to worry about now going into the Eastern Final?
Well, let's set the record straight. Clicking, I don't know if that's a strong enough term to describe how Trevor Harris did. This is a performance for the ages, Mark, and quite frankly, the exact opposite of what we saw at Bo Levi, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. Trevor put up 22 straight completions. He, quite amazingly, had a 92% completion percentage. They did some crazy things on offense, thanks to Trevor Harris and the crew. They definitely took it to Montreal, and I don't think that score was indicative. You know, I don't think if it wasn't for Vernon Adams Jr. that they would have scored 14 points, let alone 29. Some of the things that he did himself were just almost indescribable, taking the game on his shoulders. But going into Hamilton, I think that if they can have the same performance offensively, then they can challenge Hamilton. You know, we're in that position in the season where it's the old debate, is there more benefit to having achieved the division lead and getting that first round bye, or are you better off having a game and being put under the gun and forced to compete, but keeping that razor's edge as sharp as possible? I think that Edmonton can do it, but they need to push Hamilton. They need to shut down Evans with some pass rush and limit that dynamic duo of Brandon Banks and Braylon Addison from doing the things that they do and opening up that passing game. Hamilton needs to shut down Edmonton's run game and contend with that offensive line that has allowed a league-leading fewest 25 sacks and get some pressure on Trevor Harris. If all of those things can happen, then I think Edmonton can go into Tim Hortons Field and take it. But if not, then I think Hamilton's got the edge.
How important is it going to be for Edmonton to start the way they did against Montreal too? They went out, scored on that opening drive, and really kind of to set the tone from there after that?
Well, that's kind of the undercurrent of the entire season, is seeing kind of which teams figure out that getting out to an early lead has a definitive advantage. And now we're in the playoffs. There's really no luxury to not do that. That is the quickest route to success. And you have to do that. And it's a question of who's going to take advantage of that opportunity first, or get given that opportunity first. And frankly, that's why they suit up and play the game.
But let's look at Montreal too. It's their season's over. It was a season where not much was expected of them early on, but Vernon Adams Jr.'s emergence, William Stanback having a pretty strong season. How would you rate this Alouette season as they head into the offseason now?
Well, if there was one team that I think we could call the Cinderella story this year, Montreal would be it. You know, a very destabilizing preseason for them, having Kahari Jones thrust into the head coaching role. And let's be honest, we're talking about a franchise that has defined stability in ways that I don't think others would. There's always been some turmoil the last couple of years off the field. On the field, of course, the team has struggled mightily since Anthony Calvillo retired. And of course, those two things are inextricably linked. So a great story for the CFL, a great story for the Alouettes and for the city of Montreal to kind of have out of the ashes of all of that dysfunction to have the season end the way that it did, with Kahari kind of beginning this legacy and this myth about his acumen and his abilities. And granted, that's a story that I'm pushing and a narrative that I'm pushing, but also Vernon Adams Jr., who has bided his time in the league and sat on the bench and watched other guys go in and perform and has been able to emerge as a young up and coming star at a position where the league sorely needs it, and on a team that needs it even more. So
let's move on to the big side, the big games here in Saskatchewan. It's going to be the West Final with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers coming to Saskatchewan and bringing Zach Collaros along with them after he led the Blue Bombers to a big win over the Calgary Stampeders. They actually went into Calgary and laid a beating to the Stamps. Matt, did you see that coming out of the Blue Bombers heading into the playoffs?
I didn't see the beatdown coming. I figured Winnipeg would win. I had a strong sense that Lapo was going to mad scientist some offensive package to confuse Calgary's defense. But I don't know if anybody could have predicted the tragic meltdown that Bo Levi Mitchell had. And quite frankly, I have a question of my own to ask. Why did we not see Nick Arbuckle in that game?
When you're paying Bo Levi Mitchell that much money, I guess you stick with him hell or high water. But yeah, I agree. It wasn't a great day for Bo Levi Mitchell. And I think Arbuckle, who's had a good season when Mitchell was out, could have maybe turned the tide and got things going their way.
As I watched the game and looked at the box score and the statistics, and I mean, obviously, or at least to me, Bo Levi Mitchell doesn't look like the same guy this season since coming back from his injury that he has been in previous years. He does not look as confident. I don't think his decision-making has been as sharp. I think his touchdown-to-interception ratio has slipped significantly. He seems to be throwing some pretty juvenile interceptions in the last half of the season. So it was a strange game in a lot of ways. I don't know, when was the last time Calgary only had 209 yards of offense? You know, the fact that Bo Levi had what I think could be argued is the worst performance of the season, with a passing efficiency of 22.3. And who could have ever seen that the backup quarterback for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers not only did not throw a pass, but ended up being the leading rusher?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Have you ever seen a game where a team has two different quarterbacks, one finishes as the leading passer, one finishes as the leading rusher?
Yeah, and they are able to put up 35 points on only 388 yards of offense. That was a very, very interesting performance by Winnipeg, and I think it cements Paul Lapolis's reputation as, and I'll steal my term from earlier, as a bit of a mad scientist, being able to concoct and mix up these different elements to take advantage of the tools in his toolbox. The way that Strevler was utilized as a distraction and on Dembski's touchdown run, and the fact that you've got a guy, a tool like Chris Strevler, who is basically a fullback and a linebacker playing the quarterback position, the way he launched himself into the end zone, almost unnecessarily, that almost childlike enthusiasm that he has for the game, that's infectious. And as always, I think on Winnipeg's side of things, a huge, huge advantage that I think has been a major contributor to their success this year is Justin Medlock. Let's be honest, that 52-yarder that he booted right before the half, that kind of set the ball rolling on their comeback.
Yeah, and now we're heading into a West Finals. Zach Collaros obviously going to be the talk coming into the game, where he's sitting going up against his former team, a team that maybe he didn't have the greatest time in Saskatchewan. So what do you think it's going to be like for him coming back to Saskatchewan now as the opposition and with the Blue Bombers for a West Final? How do you think he's going to handle that?
Well, all the off-the-field stuff, you know, Zach has been around the league enough years to know its business and, you know, to do his best to compartmentalize the personal or emotional side of things. But that being said, I'm sure that should Winnipeg end up being victorious, that win might taste a little bit sweeter given the history between himself and the organization. Other than that, I mean, I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I don't see why Winnipeg in the game would adopt a different philosophy than what they did against Calgary. You know, that is a very, very unique position to be in as a football team and as an offensive coordinator. For Paul Lapolis to have all of those specialized tools at his disposal in front of a talented and veteran and healthy offensive line, you know, it's got to be akin to, you know, playing Tiger Woods golf with Tiger Woods, or, you know, Madden with the super character where all of the attributes are jacked to 100. Because, I mean, all you have to do is pick.
You mean Michael Collaros. Vick in Madden 2005?
Exactly. You know, there's Strebler, there's Collaros, there's Andrew Harris, there's Nick Dembski, there's Darvin Adams, there's Wolitarski, you know, all of these weapons for Lapolis to choose from in order to confuse defenses. And it's really not that hard. All you have to do is put a defender in a position where he has to think as opposed to react, and you've already won. So
yeah, with the two-headed monster and kind of, yeah, like you said, that kind of working in their favor, do you think that kind of leads to maybe a big game from Andrew Harris in this West Final? He had a solid game of 57 yards in that win over Calgary, but do you think maybe if the Riders start focusing a little bit on Strebler when he's out there, that they can get Andrew Harris going a little bit more?
Absolutely. You've got to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul at some point. This is the beauty of Winnipeg's situation right now, is if they play their cards right, it is extremely challenging for them to not be successful. Somebody is going to perform. It's just a question of who during the game are they going to key on? Who has been determined to be the big threat in Saskatchewan's scouting report, and who are they going to key on, and how do they adjust? So, I mean, this is going to be the most beautiful part of the game, is to just, you know, Strebler or Collaros, they're just like playing point guard. They just got to dish the ball and let these playmakers do what they do.
Well, we've spent about 15 minutes talking about the other teams. Now let's talk Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and they're going into this game. There's still a lot of question marks surrounding Cody Fajardo. He didn't practice up until today. He was throwing some balls at practice today, from what I've heard, but still dealing with a back issue. Should Rider Nation be concerned about Cody Fajardo's status going into the West Final, and whether he's at 100% or 75%? What do we think we're going to get out of Cody Fajardo in that game?
Well, when they give you generic terms like upper or lower body or low back, and I've read reports where in fact it says it's not the low back, but the oblique. So mm-hmm. On the average human being, that's under the love handle, in case those people out there listening don't know their physiology. And that's definitely a muscle that you need to throw the football, especially the bigger, heavier, colder CFL football on a wider, longer field. So when that is the guy running your offense, yeah, I'd be a little worried. And, you know, those are the muscles that in cold weather sometimes don't behave in predictable fashion. And that's from my own personal experience, I can tell you that. That alone, I think, is a cause for concern. When you add in the fact that there's really not a whole lot of depth or experience behind Cody on the bench, let alone playoff experience, I was actually surprised that he was throwing footballs at all this week, and would have anticipated them waiting until the day before to see whether he was comfortable or not, not wanting to take a risk. But be that as it may, you know, the best case scenario, everything's cool and, you know, a little bit of lidocaine and, you know, away you go and have a good game and some adrenaline, like Fajardo said. Worst case scenario is Saskatchewan is severely hamstrung by not having their starting quarterback and an inexperienced backup in the game. And once again, I can tell you exactly what that's like. And those of you who remember the 2007 Grey Cup against the Bombers will remember that too. So it's a question of that position. Saskatchewan is going to compete. Their defense is good enough. You know, I think the difference will be that quarterback position and maybe just maybe Medlock and his consistency.
Do you take much stock into the, like you said, Cody Fajardo talked about how adrenaline's going to play a big part in it. And he just seems like the kind of guy that's going to battle through an injury to make sure he's in the lineup. But do you take much stock in him fighting through that and what maybe the intangibles might bring to it if he can fight through and play that game, whether he's at 100% or not?
Everybody loves a good comeback story. And, you know, if he can go out there and battle through and, you know, be that hard-nosed soldier that, you know, inspires everybody through his actions, that's great. Now, long-term, in terms of, you know, resource management, if Saskatchewan wins and he gets hurt again, what good is that going to do in a Grey Cup to get there without him? Yeah. It'll give you a week to prepare with your young guys. But, you know, these are the challenging questions that I believe the organization is asking themselves. But for everybody wants him to go. The fans want to go. The locker room wants him to go. He wants to go most of all. And you can tell that as being the competitor that he is, you get the sense very, very, very quickly that it'll take a, you know, pack of wild horses to keep him from getting out on that field.
Definitely. You played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I've grown up in Saskatchewan. This is the first time they're meeting in a West final since 1972. What do you think this means to both these fan bases and organizations to be going head to head in a West final?
Well, hopefully it means enough that we're going to see some better attendance numbers than we did last week, because if my research is right, we only had just over 21,000 in Montreal and just over 24,000 in Calgary. This is for a playoff game.
Well, the East Final is sold out, as far as they announced today. The West Final, not sold out yet, but it's supposed to be +6, so I think Rider Nation will – turn out at the last minute.
I coincidentally was having the same thought as I was looking at the forecast for this weekend and going, okay, Mother Nature is smiling on the playoff ticket revenue gods, apparently. As for it being the first time since 1972, that is a way back stat, Mark. Well, then this is shaping up to be a legendary tilt then. You know, feel good stories abound. You know, a rematch of the Labor Day Classic and the Banjo Bowl, and you know, here's another opportunity to see where the two teams stand, and they've been battling all season long. It's a great subtext to the Western Division this season, and is going to be, regardless of the outcome, is going to be legendary in the lore and myth of this interprovincial rivalry.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those fun games. I think anything can happen, and it's going to really, I think, come down to the wire. I think both these teams are kind of feel the how much is on the line, and they're going to lay a lot out there on the field for these fan bases.
I'm looking forward to it.
The other thing I will bring up today, this is Rider News. The street outside Mosaic Stadium renamed George Reed Way today. How big, how special is that to honor a guy that's a pretty important piece of this franchise and a pretty important piece of the CFL history?
Well, you seem to have put on your understatement hat tonight, Mark, because calling George Reed how did you say it again? A pretty important part of the Rough Riders is like saying that dessert is pretty important to me. You're talking about a guy who played 50 plus years ago, who was able to do things that to this day still stand in the record books, that athletes who have been the beneficiary of decades and decades of sports science and nutrition have yet to be able to replicate and overcome. That in and of itself says something. Records are made to be broken, and the fact that his have not is an indication of just how great, with a capital G, George with a capital G really is, how deserving he is of this honor and this accolade. He's been the quintessential professional, 13 seasons, all-time leading rusher, a variety of different records, and then transitions into a half-decade-long career of philanthropy and community service and community activism. That's the poster child right there. So in my mind, actually probably a little bit overdue, but kudos to George Reed.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible that they did it, and it's a great way to honor him. He's already got a statue outside the stadium, but now the street outside it as well, named after George Reed. And the address for Mosaic Stadium is now 1734 George Reed Way, his number 34. So that's pretty cool. And a nice little touch going into the West Final, which is only the third time the Riders have hosted a West Final. Since first time since 2009, and it'll be a big game. Who do you think is going to be pulling out the win here in the Eastern Final? Let's start with that one. Edmonton in Hamilton Sunday at 12 o'clock here Saskatchewan time. How do you think that one plays out, Matt?
Well, as much as I absolutely relished watching Edmonton play against Montreal and that little tilt, and I think that they're not going to be able to match Hamilton. Edmonton only won by 8 points, which is enough, but they won by 8 points playing against one guy, playing against a quarterback who didn't really have a whole lot of support staff. Mm. Now, Dane Evans, he can't say the same thing about Hamilton's offense. They are, you know, at the top of the league in so many categories for a very good reason. And they are potent and dangerous. And you know that Orlando Steinauer has got something tricky cooked up for his defense to try and complement things. So the task is set for Edmonton. They have some challenges, and if they can't meet them, then I suspect they're going to come away disappointed. So for that reason, I'm going to go with Hamilton.
I think Hamilton wins it, but I have a feeling. I just got a feeling about Edmonton. Trevor Harris really, we talked about it already, had put on a clinic in that Eastern semifinal, and I think I'm going to go with Edmonton. I think Edmonton becomes the first crossover team to advance to the Grey Cup, and they'll be in Calgary on Sunday, November 24th, to play the winner of the Western Final. So,
So you, so you, so you, you are aware that no crossover team has ever won a divisional final.
like you said earlier, records are made to be broken. I think that trend has been kind of working towards being broken over the last few years. There's been a lot of West teams in that Eastern final over the last few years, and I think Edmonton finally breaks through, despite Hamilton being hands down the best team in the regular season. I think Edmonton's got some momentum, and they go in and win that one over the Ticats. So I'm picking Edmonton. Now let's talk the Western final. Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Sunday, 3:30 at Mosaic Stadium. Who do you have coming out on top and advancing to the Grey Cup?
So no surprise to anybody who listens with any regularity that I'm a bit of a skeptic, and I'm wired to kind of see worst case scenarios, and I see some hubris, or at least the potential for pride getting in the way of Saskatchewan, who might be looking at this whole Zach Collaros coming back to Regina thing with a bit of a skewed perspective. And for them to marginalize or diminish what Winnipeg is capable of with Caleros, just because McAdoo wasn't able to make it work with Caleros and Brandon Bridge, doesn't mean Lapo's not going to be able to make it work with Caleros and Strevler. And I don't know. Maybe it's the time of year, maybe I'm getting some seasonal mood affectation disorder setting in, but I don't see good things happening for Saskatchewan. As much as I would like to say that I believe that it would, it's a home game. City of Regina would be rejuvenated and energized for weeks and weeks. I just don't think that Saskatchewan is going to be able to handle that intricate and dynamic little offensive philosophy that Lapo seems to have cooked up lately.
I do agree with you. I think Winnipeg's going to give the Riders trouble with that two-headed monster quarterback, and then throw in Andrew Harris in the mix. Darvin Adams had a big game in the Western semifinal. But I'm in Saskatchewan, and I got to pick the Riders.
I know you do. I know you. I can't even change your mind with the argument of the importance of special teams and field position and the relative disparity between those units, between the teams.
No, I think it's gonna be a magical day at Mosaic Stadium, where Cody Fajardo is gonna come out, have a game of his life on, and the Riders are gonna walk away with the victory and go to the Grey Cup in Calgary.
Understated and optimistic, Mark. I like this.
I have a feeling. I don't know. We'll see. You never know. That's why they play the game.
Go with the gut, yes.
Yep. So let's look at the Eastern Final. Matt has Hamilton. I have Edmonton. Western Final, Matt has Winnipeg. I have Saskatchewan. We'll see who comes out on top and plays in the 107th Grey Cup next week. It'll be it's gonna the two great. We've already seen two really good playoff games. I think we're gonna see two more this weekend, and hopefully a great Grey Cup as well. That does it for this week's podcast. Thanks for sitting down with me, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And you can find the podcast, as always, on iTunes.